From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour is being made at 201 Fall Street in Seneca Falls. It's site of a former industrial building that's at the center of a debate in its small community. The Huntington Building was built in 1870 as the home of the National Yeast Company. Later, it housed a luxury car manufacturer, and most recently, a car dealership occupied the brick structure. When that dealership moved out in April, it raised a number of questions about the future of that building. And while this is the story of Seneca Falls, it's really the story of hundreds of towns across the country that are trying to balance historic preservation with economic development. Really, they're trying to have both. Well, here's what's happening in Seneca Falls. First of all, Circle K, an Ohio-based chain of convenience and gas stations, wants to buy the building from its current owner. If that sale were to go through, Circle K would demolish the Huntington building and construct a new, larger structure featuring gas pumps and a convenience store. It would replace the gas station and the convenience store currently located next door. Now, the owner applied to the Seneca Falls Heritage Preservation Committee for a permit to demolish the building, but preservationists have objected, saying they want the building saved and revived. The Landmark Society listed the Huntington Building as one of its five to revive sites for 2018. It says it would like to see the structure preserved and maybe transformed into housing, mixed-use space, artist studios, or other ideas, a space that could preserve the character of this corridor in the community. But some members of the community are pushing back against that, saying the area really does need a convenience store. According to Josh Durso, a columnist for the Finger Lakes Times, Seneca Falls lost its last remaining grocery store in recent years, now has only two convenience stores within walking distance from the village. He says the north end of Seneca County is becoming a food desert. Well, the deadline for a decision here is March 2019, and this hour, a discussion about if and how we can find a balance between historic preservation, economic and tourism development, and the needs of local taxpayers, the needs for those to find food options as well, both in Seneca Falls and really beyond. There's a lot to unpack here with our guests. Josh Durso is a former resident of Seneca Falls and the columnist for the Finger Lakes Times, and you got everybody talking. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Also with us is Caitlin Mivas, a preservation planner for the Landmark Society. Caitlin, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
And their associate director of preservation for the Landmark Society's Larry Francer. Larry, welcome back to you as well.
Thanks for having us.
And Emil Bovee is a lifelong resident of Seneca Falls, a local attorney, and former member of several local town boards. Emil, welcome to the program to you.
It's an honor to be here.
Well, I'm going to start with the Landmark Society just to remind us, and Caitlin, I guess I'll turn to you first here and just say, we tried to kind of sum it up in the intro. I think this is the story of so many small towns that are really trying hard to make sure they preserve their character while finding and fulfilling the needs of the local population. What did you make of when, I know you've talked to Josh before and you guys have met, what did you make when you first read his work in the Finger Lakes Times saying maybe the Landmark Society is missing the needs of the local residents here?
Well, I would start by challenging the premise of your intro, the idea of balancing historic preservation and economic development. Historic preservation is inherently economic development, and we can talk a little bit about that more as we go. But yeah, I've heard Josh's concerns, and I think that through this conversation we can pretty much address all of those by sharing really what we're advocating for and what preservation is all about and what it can accomplish.
Okay, Larry, what did you make of what you read?
Well, I've just got to reiterate the whole economic development and preservation being intertwined. And we feel very strongly that there are options, and options need to be addressed.
Okay. Josh, you are someone who lived in Seneca Falls, and so I know you appreciate the work the Landmark Society is doing, you know, sort of from a mission level. I think it's reading your piece for the Finger Lakes Times, it reads like someone who says, look, I'm the guy who's lived here, and there are needs that you may be missing here. So why don't you lay it out for our listeners what your concerns were there?
So I think in part of the whole debate here about, you know, whether the Landmark Society is focusing on the right things or not, I think I should qualify everything by saying I don't think it's their responsibility necessarily to deal with some of the things that I brought up in that column. But the point sort of going back to there has historically tended to be a lack of good communication between the town and the residents. And the residents tend to get pretty agitated pretty quickly, as you can imagine, when you see a structure like The Huntington Building on the corner there just sit and look the same for a very, very long, long time. And that's kind of where that frustration built up, I think. And I was sort of echoing what I was hearing almost on a daily basis. I mean, I still work in Seneca Falls every day, so I hear this stuff over and over and over again. And a lot of people would be very excited, myself included, about a really nice mixed-use space. But if you're saying at the expense of what would be, you know, a large convenience store, I don't want to poo-poo anyone here, but like that is the closest thing to an actual grocery store that the town of the village, the former village of Seneca Falls, actually has now.
Okay. And when you talk about the building, by the way, and it looking the same year after year, you put it in the category of an eyesore?
Yeah, it needs work. It needs help. It needs some love. And of course, if that can be accomplished, that would be an ideal situation. But if that cannot be accomplished, or that the developers can't be lined up, or that the money can't be sort of put together, for me, and we'll talk more about this, I'm assuming, as mm-hmm. we go through the hour, it seems a little difficult to hold the owner of a property hostage to basically say you have to wait for this type of development to come along. Otherwise, you can't do anything with your building.
All right, I'll let them respond to that in just a second. Emil, what do you make of the debate so far?
Well, Seneca Falls isn't just any place. It's the place where the first Women's Rights Convention was held. It may be one of the most important historic sites in the whole country. As a result of that, the federal and state government have invested millions in Seneca Falls, created a national park, created an urban cultural park. There are numerous historic districts. And all of this was done with the idea that the fabric would be maintained. So we have a heritage preservation ordinance. We have a heritage preservation commission. And one of the issues here was that the heritage preservation commission was not being allowed to do its job. The commission's job is to preserve historic structures and to make decisions as to whether buildings should be demolished or not. And that process is underway now. It's their job to make that decision, and I have confidence that they'll make the right decision, yes or no. So the idea that the building is an eyesore, part of the heritage preservation ordinance is that the owner should be maintaining the building. So there's a question whether Mr. Koch has maintained it. He's not being held hostage to anything he didn't know about in 1980 when he bought the building. This ordinance has been in place in various forms since then. And, you know, we won't be able to see this on the radio, but right over there in the wall, there's a picture, the Five to Revive picture of the building, and it's a very handsome building, could be converted. And these types of buildings can be converted. In Geneva, the Cracker family, Cracker Factory was converted from an old cutlery factory mm-hmm. to a beautiful event space and a place where they make furniture. So these sorts of things can happen. As far as this particular site needing to be a convenience store, and I understand what Josh is talking about, food justice, it's an issue in Geneva, and it's an important issue, but whether this particular site needs to be the solution for that, that's an up in the air question. There are a number of convenience stores already in Seneca Falls, and as far as getting to a grocery store and buying food, there's a tremendous transportation system in Seneca Falls that will take you right to the grocery store and back. So I think these are important things to talk about, but I'm not sure that they override the importance of the heritage of Seneca Falls, the importance of going forward. And I think these things need to be balanced. And I think there are other economic things happening in Seneca Falls in addition to tourism. We have a ITT plant. We have a landfill. We have Bonadent. We have many large retail stores. So I don't think the economic future here is being hindered by somehow reusing this building. And I like to use the word reuse. I think preservation sometimes has a negative connotation.
That's a weird thing. I mean, that probably hurts Caitlin Mivas's heart to hear the word preservation. But I take the point. Go ahead. But, go ahead.
We take it as well.
Let me continue. In Seneca Falls, I prepared a list of numerous structures that have been reused for different purposes. A high school is now a multi-use office building. An old church has been converted to apartments. A number of schools have been converted. Downtown retail stores have been converted to restaurants. So these are all signs of reuse. Most of these involve economic development and increases in the tax base. And as far as increasing the tax base, just one more point, I know I'm going on here, that if the town wants to increase the tax base and thereby lower taxes, spreading the taxes out over a larger base, they could do a revale. The town of Seneca Falls equalization rate is now 90%. That means there's another 10% out there. And let's not forget, Seneca Falls is a very unique place because of the money it gets from the landfill. It really makes the town finances a little crazy because people haven't experienced higher taxes. The town this year actually put in place a tax rate that would be the rate if there was no money coming in from the landfill. I was kind of surprised that it wasn't bigger than that. But I mean, there's a lot of issues in Seneca Falls. And so I think it's good to have this conversation.
All right, before we get in, we're going to go back to the question of what makes a food desert. And in a moment, we're going to bring in Mitch Gruber from FoodLink, who works on this issue all the time. But before that, a couple of points here. I want to turn back to Josh Durso, columnist for the Finger Lakes Times. And then I want to kind of offer the Landmark Society a chance to respond to Josh's point. So briefly, Josh, when Emil says, if there is a need for a convenience store, and I am hearing from Emil and Josh two different stories on how much of a need there is or how much, you know, sort of food access there is. But if there is a need, it doesn't have to go in that building. What I'm hearing from you is, look, there is a need, and there's someone proposing it. It happens to be that building, which has sat vacant forever. So eventually, you have to decide this is going to, it has to go somewhere. So how do you square that with Emil's point that it shouldn't be there, that that's not the right building necessarily for a convenience store?
I think the problem seems to be that there just isn't a ton of available space within the former village bounds. There are two grocery stores, Tops and Walmart, but you pretty much, if you're not relying on a vehicle, you have to walk, and that's practically to the border of Waterloo. That is, I would assume, probably like a 35 or 40 minute walk for the average person. If you live in the former village, and he says that transportation is not an issue, I would just gently push back on that and say that, you know, through the various community groups that I've been involved with over the last 2 to 3 years in Seneca County as a whole, transportation and housing are the two biggest issues that any community in Seneca County is facing right now. And the transportation system that exists, the public transportation system that we would call it, it is not anything what some of your listeners might be thinking about when they think public transportation, a couple stops during a day, that kind of thing, not something that's running around the clock or being thoroughly, thoroughly effective for those people who don't have access to transportation around the clock or can, you know, while they're working 2 or 3 jobs, sort of carve in time to walk to a grocery store, that sort of thing.
All right. So you're concerned about people, especially people living in poverty who don't have access to a vehicle, who are going to see this and say, my main concern is food access.
Right, and okay. I think, yeah, and there's, I would assume, this is just my observation, I would assume that there's a reason why in the last 2 or 3 years, I sort of joked about this, you started to see nice and easy the convenience stores start to sell produce in the gas station. Mm-hmm. That's, you know.
So you think that's telling?
It certainly seems it.
Okay, and then Caitlin and Larry, briefly, you know, Josh contends that eventually, if nothing is happening in a building, historic or not, you don't want to, and I'll use the phrase he used, I don't think he meant to use this in a super bombastic way, but just to make the point, you can't hold hostage the owner to say, you can develop it, but only this way. And in some sense, it feels like that's what's happening here. What do you say?
Well, I think Emil said this a second ago, or maybe Larry said it. The owner purchased this building knowing that it was part of the local historic district and was protected by the local ordinance. So that's on you as a building owner when you acquire a building that's protected to be aware of the restrictions that are in place. And, you know, calling it an eyesore, I think, is I hate that word because it reminds me of, you know, 1960s when, you know, our urban government leaders called neighborhood slums and blighted, and therefore they needed to be wiped out. I think it oversimplifies. You know, the building's in the condition it's in because it hasn't been taken care of or hasn't been occupied, and that is no one's responsibility except the current owner. So, you know, we don't like to throw up roadblocks without proposing solutions, and there are solutions that haven't been explored that we would like to work collaboratively with the owner to explore. And there are developers that we have spoken with who are interested and think there is a viable project there that would serve the community. And I think that we also get this, you know, with these kind of conversations that have come up before, we get this false dichotomy between providing food for the community and, oh, just saving this building. That is not, you know, it's not an either or argument here. We all want to help solve the food desert problem. In no way do we want to make it seem like preservationists are opposed to providing access to food.
Okay. And Larry, briefly, go ahead.
Yeah, I did want to bring up the point that the Landmark Society and preservationists in general don't work in a vacuum. And specifically with our Five to Revive, but really with all our preservation work, we're not going to go into a community and just say, that's a beautiful building, you have to save it. They're going to come to us. And we had people coming to us about their concern about this building. And to, you know, go a little bit further with Caitlin's point, we do have a developer, a very well-established developer who has worked on low-income housing, senior housing, and that's the project that they are interested in for this site. And they have contacted Peter Koch, and they don't want to get in the middle of a big political situation. And their point was, if you would like to investigate another option, we are here. Please contact us.
All right. In other words, listeners, this is not a case of preservationists saying, we like this building, don't put that thing there, we have no other ideas for it. This is they're saying that they've thought long and hard, they're listening to residents. So that's part of the debate. And I want to bring in Mitch Gruber, who's the chief programs officer with FoodLink, who works very hard on questions of how to define what a food desert is and what to do about access. Mitch, I know you've been listening. What do you make of this one?
Thanks for having me. Welcome to myself to a wonderful conversation. I will say that this is it's a really complex subject, and I want to start out by saying that I really am not going to weigh in one way or another on what should happen in Seneca Falls. You know, I've spent a little bit of time there. Seneca County is part of FoodLink service area, but I'm not nearly well versed enough in the community to know what makes sense in this building. I'm particularly conflicted by it because I also care personally. I care really deeply about preservation and history, especially in a community as historic as Seneca Falls. But what I want, the only thing I want to add to this conversation, and I'm only going to be on the phone for a few minutes, is just I just want to add how complex and complicated food retail is right now. I sent an article to Evan just before I got on called The Retail Apocalypse is Heading Straight for Food Retail. And it's true. We saw it with Tops just recently. Winn-Dixie, which is one of the biggest national retail grocer chains, just went bankrupt as well. That's all the way up and down the eastern seaboard, mostly in the southeast of the country. We're seeing Amazon get heavily involved into food retail and other kind of click-and-collect options. But what this article really stated that I think is relevant for this conversation is that all over the place, we are seeing that big traditional supermarkets, 120,000 square foot supermarkets with thousands and thousands of SKUs, are being replaced by places like Aldi and Lidl and Family Dollar. And, you know, the place that I know very well is the city of Rochester, obviously. And if you look right around the corner from where Tops closed on Lake Avenue, they are just putting the finishing touches on a brand new, I forget if it's a Family Dollar or a Dollar General, brand new build. I drive by it every day on Dewey Avenue. So clearly this is the case in urban settings, and I think that you're seeing through this conversation that the same things are happening in more rural communities as well, that people want access to food, people want food retailers, but the traditional big box grocers just aren't there to do the bills, and some of these convenience stores are. It just makes things more complicated, unfortunately.
So a couple of questions then, Mitch. What do you make of the debate about transportation access? Because, you know, Josh Durso is raising the concern that this can't just be good enough if you can drive to a Walmart or a Tops in an adjoining town, that for a population that doesn't have their own vehicle, that we have to consider everyone here and that there are real concerns about that. Whether that's Rochester, whether it's Seneca Falls, how true is that concern? How do you see that playing in?
It's huge, and Josh is absolutely correct. The transportation issues in our country are significantly harder to overcome in rural areas than they are in urban areas. I mean, people can criticize RTS all they want. RTS is reliable and consistent, and it may not have the volume and frequency that everybody wants, but you're getting to where you want to go at some point. The rural public transportation options are few and far between, and they really they don't fit people's needs to get to where they need to go, which is why we see huge issues when it comes to health disparities and food access and food insecurity in our rural communities. I see it every day with FoodLink through our partners of, you know, food pantries and soup kitchens. The ability to get, and there's some wonderful wonderful emergency food programs in Seneca Falls, in particular the Seneca House of Concern. But for people to get there, I've talked to their executive director at length about this. They're carpooling. They're figuring out how to plan a day full of other appointments, how to get into the House of Concern. There are not easy transportation options, which is really challenging when you're talking about buying food.
So, Mitch, before we let you go, then I've read the article that you referenced, and you know, about a retail apocalypse that might be coming as Americans are shifting, sometimes based on their desire, sometimes based on need, and a lack of resources, the way we try to access food. What's the takeaway from a piece like that to you and the work that you're doing? You know, again, whether it's Seneca Falls or elsewhere, what we have to be ready to do as communities where, you know, these things are changing in terms of access or where we're getting our food sources from.
Well, you know, I'll be a broken record because every time I'm on your show, I talk about the same thing. I think we need to be creative about our food retail solutions. So I referenced a couple times in the past some nonprofit food retailers that have popped up across the country. The Food Bank in Philadelphia started a retail store. The Salvation Army in Baltimore just started a store. There's a couple others, and this is something that Food Bank is absolutely in the middle of considering and trying to do some research on right now. But I think that creativity does not need to preclude the Landmark Society. I give Caitlin and Larry a lot of credit for talking about the role of preservation in economic development. I think that if projects are thought of with a longer view and think about how do we mix things like housing and office space and food retail into developments that can really attract a lot of dollars, private and potentially public as well, because the state is obviously very anxious to fund things like this. That may be a solution that to part of this as well, is not just looking at an individual convenience store or hoping and praying that a store like Aldi's or Tops will either open or not close in the community, but how do we actually attract and create spaces using layer funding sources to create retail food space, I think is a really important part of the conversation.
Thanks for taking the time today, Mitch. I know we'll talk again soon on this because this is an ongoing challenge for a lot of communities. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. Take care.
Mitch Gruber is a member of Rochester City Council and also the Chief Programs Officer for FoodLink. So if you're just joining us, the conversation is about one of the five on the list of the Landmark Society's annual Five to Revive. It's a building in Seneca Falls that, there's one proposal from a developer to knock the building down and build a convenience store there. And the Landmark Society is interested in seeing an alternative solution in which that building is preserved and a different developer comes in and uses it in terms of mixed use, maybe different mixed housing, something that's much more sort of consistent with the character of a historic community. And Josh Durso, a columnist for the Finger Lakes Times and a former resident and someone who still works in Seneca Falls, says he's interested in historic preservation. He's also interested in food access and thinks right now there's more of a need in favor of a convenience store. So there's a few things I admit I don't understand. So Caitlin Mivas, let me ask, why would, if this is going to be a convenience store, why do we have to knock it down anyway? I mean, could the building still stand and be a convenience store? I don't know the answer to that.
I mean, theoretically it could, but that's just not how corporations operate. I mean, they've got their, you know, plan A, plan B that they want to.
So they're gonna do their cookie cutter blueprint in every town, which means unless the bones are really ideally suited to that, they're gonna knock it down and start over, Larry?
Right, for Circle K, for that proposal.
Yeah.
No one's saying that even if a developer comes in who wants to do low-income housing, that on the first floor there could be a space that includes some sort of food.
So I do want to ask all of our guests the question, if we knock down a building like this particular building in Seneca Falls, of which you can find pictures and more information on the Landmark Society's list for their Five to Revive, if you want to check it out, see what we're talking about. I want to ask what a community loses, because there's going to be different perspectives here, because there are perspectives on the loss in different ways. There's sort of this debate about, should we lose that if it means gaining something else? So I want to, and I'll start with Caitlin. We're going to go around the table. What does a community like Seneca Falls lose if we knock this building down and put in a Circle K?
You lose an opportunity to create a development that could really serve the needs of the community, whether it's mixed use, market rate, affordable housing, senior housing, some kind of local retail. Typically, these historic rehab projects are having uses in them that serve the community and that support local businesses and local residents. So you lose that opportunity to create this really larger ripple effect that benefits the wider community. And when you demolish a building, a historic building like this, that's right at the street level, and replace it with probably a big parking lot in front and gas pumps, that starts to affect the overall streetscape of the community. It's not good urban planning in 2018 to demolish quality historic buildings and replace them with convenience stores and gas stations. It doesn't benefit the urban form and the urban streetscape.
Okay, Larry Francer.
I think you're also really losing your gateway into your historic village or prior village. This is really an underutilized property. It goes all the way to the water. It could be a wonderful campus. And I think visually it's very important when you're coming from that direction to have a real gateway bringing you into this village. And I think you just lose that completely.
Okay, Emil?
Well, first of all, the building isn't vacant, right? Well, it hasn't been vacant very long. It's been vacant since March. Before that, it had been occupied continuously since 1870. But I think Larry and Caitlin are correct. There's a fabric that's important to the people that come to this historic site. This building is the last standing brick factory. There were scores, if not hundreds, of brick factories in Seneca Falls. Most of them were demolished when the canal was improved. So this is an important structure. The gateway is important. I actually bought a piece of property across the street, and my purpose in doing that is to maintain some green space. I'm talking to people about creating a park and maybe statuary in there, so that when you enter the main part of historic Seneca Falls, there you have it. You have this Huntington building restored, and I think this idea of having food, some kind of food justice or retail, that's a good idea. But I think it's also important to compare this building to another structure. And people say eyesore needs to be demolished. There was a building across the canal. It's a limestone, the last limestone factory in Seneca Falls. It's being redeveloped, reused into the National Women's Hall of Fame. It's on the canal, very similar to this. People said 10 years ago, this building has to be demolished, can't be used. It's almost ready to get a CFO. There's another building that everyone said had to be demolished. It's everyone in Seneca Falls is familiar with the beautiful stone Trinity Church. Well, the first Trinity Church was across the canal. Everybody said that had to be demolished. Now that's been reused very effectively into apartments. So there should be a reuse for this building. I think it's consistent with the plan that was comprehensive plan that talks about maintaining the rural streetscape. If we need to do a C-store, certainly, or provide transportation, I think there are ways to do that without sacrificing this building.
All right, and real quick, Larry, before I turn to Josh.
Right, I wanted to make the point that gateway does not only mean for tourists. I think it's very important that it is a source of pride for the residents as well.
Okay,
that's
fair
it.
Enough. Josh?
I actually agree completely. I think the point that the town loses, or what the town loses going through this situation, if that building is ultimately demolished and a convenience store goes there, the town loses an opportunity to really connect with the residents and actually get a good feeling win, because I think that's one of the big things that residents are craving right now, is something that feels good to all parties involved. But because of the lack of communication and because of the polarization that Emil mentioned earlier, it's really difficult right now to have this kind of discussion that we're having right now in Seneca Falls about anything, much less something as polarizing as whether to develop a property one way or another way.
And let me just ask you, Josh, because again, if you're just joining us here, Josh Durso's piece for the Finger Lakes Times is why we're here. And that's what a good columnist does, by the way, is represent a lot of different perspectives and get people thinking in a lot of different directions. I think it's healthy. I don't think you can have these conversations without that. I think this is a really good thing that this conversation's happening. Josh, I can think of, and I'm not going to name any names right now because I don't want to be unkind, and people will have different opinions, but I can think of villages and small towns across the Finger Lakes region, some of which, when you walk in, bike in, drive in, you have no doubt where you are. It's, you know, really stirring. And then there are some where you drive in, walk in, bike in, and you go, whose idea was a Taco Bell and a gas station right on your main, like, why... here, what this is anywhere USA, and there's a homogenization of America. Now, there's a couple of things that come to mind to me. Number one, I would think everybody, probably you included, want historic character or individualism when you can have it, and then you balance that with, okay, but if we literally are a food desert, we don't get to play the idealist game. We have to play the need game. So how do you balance that? How do you view that in Seneca Falls?
I think there has to be a better effort to plan, a better effort to coming up with a community-wide plan, not just having an organization or two sort of sitting at a table and trying to figure out what the best options are. A long-term plan, not just, well, what are we going to do 6 months from now, but what is the vision 10 years from now, and does it match what we want to do now and the steps we're taking now? And I think it goes way beyond what individual groups like the Landmark Society or Preserve Seneca Falls or any of those types of entities are trying to do. And the work they're doing is incredibly important, but it has to be broader. It has to be more inclusive, and you got to have a lot more people at the table. One of the big drawbacks and struggles that I think small communities like Seneca Falls always fall into is just the small number of people who are actually participating in government. So the planning boards, whatever, the historic preservation, whatever you want to call it, you tend to have the same group of maybe like 20 to 40 people who are heavily involved, really care, and then everyone else is just trying to survive. And that's kind of where I think we've fallen into this. In Seneca Falls, anyway, you've fallen into this. There's a group here, there's a group here, and there's not much in between.
So if the local government could come to the residents and say, we're going to say no to this plan to demolish this building and put a convenience store there, but we recognize the food access issue, here's the alternative to that. Would that split the difference for you?
I think it would, and I even think just as far as, you know, being, if all parties involved in this particular debate were out in front from the get-go saying, here is the alternative plan, I think that it would have quelled a solid percentage of the folks mm-hmm. who are against it.
Okay. Caitlin, Larry, agree, disagree there? I mean, could there be more to help people who really feel like food access is a problem feel comfortable knowing that, okay, we're going to say no to the Circle K here, but we've got an alternative?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's difficult. We, in historic preservation, we always try to be as proactive as possible and get folks in the community involved. We've been working with AMIL and Preserve Seneca Falls for a number of years to get that grassroots organization up and running. But we inherently just have to be reactive to cases like this as they pop up. And, you know, finding an alternative location for this kind of development is somewhat outside the scope of what we do. You know, we're looking to create a solution for this particular site. But certainly there can always be more public engagement, always be more people involved, more residents involved in the public process, for sure.
I'd like to get back to your phone calls, and I'm late for our only break of the hour. So let's go ahead and take that break. And when we come back, we'll get into some of the emails and phone calls that have come in as we talk about Seneca Falls, but also about historic preservation as economic development while trying to address a community's entire needs. So this is a story of one town, but it's really a story of all towns. And the reason we're here, Josh Durso, a columnist for the Finger Lakes Times, weighed in on this recently. The Landmark Society put this building that we're talking about in Seneca Falls on its annual Five to Revive list, which you can find at landmarksociety.org, if I remember your website. Caitlin Mivas and Larry Francer are here from the Landmark Society. Emil Bovee is here as someone who is advocating, I think, on him behalf of himself as a lifelong resident of Seneca Falls and also a former member of several local town boards. So let's go ahead and get that only break, and we'll get back to your feedback next. Coming up in our second hour, a conversation about Rochester's Puerto Rican Festival, and not just the Puerto Rican Festival, but what happens afterwards. It's not the festival, but it's a separate caravan and parade that proceeds through the northeast part of Rochester. There's always a lot of singing, chanting, cars honking, but there's a new effort to understand if the community wants something different, and we'll talk about it next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and let's get to your phone calls, and Bonnie in Rochester first. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, I would like to make a couple points. I'd like to emphasize the point at the last your guest just recently said. Mm-hmm. You know, in the city, a lot of these issues are not just urban or rural, they're both. And in the city, in the last few years, the fact that many neighborhoods now have said to the city, we're not going to take any more you telling us kind of do this or do that. We want to be actively involved. And so a lot of these charrettes and related kind of planning, it's ongoing. It's not just, well, you have this thing and you're going to plan for that. And that's made a huge difference because, well, you know, let's face it, a lot of everyday people are not exposed to a lot of these things, and it gives people a voice. And I'm not saying it's magical, but it really has, I think, made a difference. And then areas kind of join together. The second point I would make is I'm a big supporter of worker-owned co-ops. I think, you know, you can have different kind of co-ops, but I don't know the location, but it sounds like that might be a good option. And third, and I'm so pleased to say this, you can't understand, is that a lot of us are fighting back over what we think is a takeover of dollar stores. And the city has almost 20. And there was a wonderful article in the Huffington Post just recently. If you haven't seen it, Evan, you're welcome to go look for it, okay, or I can send it to you, that documented a nationwide organized fight against the takeover, and a lot of it's in rural, but also in urban, of dollar stores. And there's a long version of this. The local ones collectively get $8 billion a year. And the way they operate is kind of what you were saying before. They have the builder person come in, and they kind of figure out who they can wiggle around and meet off on the side. And they build their thing, and then the owner to the store itself comes in, and they kind of take over. But it's a takeover, and we need economic changes and things that are going to stop this stuff, or we will just have a bunch of places that are just where you go to get something and not where you go to have a community sense.
Bonnie, thank you for that. And so let me kick it over to Josh Durso, a columnist. Are you concerned about a dollar store takeover or, you know, stores of the like?
You know, no, I don't think so. Not directly. In a rural setting, I think it's different than in an urban setting. This is more of a problem, I think, in an urban setting, or more of a dilemma in an urban setting. I'm just much more concerned about the feeling among the residents that this is not a really inclusive conversation. If this were a mom-and-pop operation that was thinking about opening up and not Circle K on that corner, I've heard from a lot of folks who have said, you know, would this be a completely different debate? Would this debate not be happening? And, you know, it's valid because we don't know.
Okay. Are you concerned, from the Landmark Society, Caitlin and Larry, are you concerned, as Bonnie raises the point, about dollar store takeovers?
We even had a session at our statewide conference last year about, you know, big box pharmacy outlets coming into communities. It's an issue when the corporations aren't willing to work within the local community's desires to work within the existing framework of the buildings that are already there and the infrastructure that's already there. You know, these corporations, like I said before, come in with design schematic A, and that's the cheapest, easiest thing for them to build, and that's what they want to build. And they won't do otherwise unless your community forces them to.
Okay. Larry, you want to add to that too?
I'm okay. I don't think anybody wants more dollar stores. I don't think. I guess that's okay. How I feel.
I'm not sure my wife would agree with that one.
See?
But I think I think this can be verified, that there's some kind of a movement going on with these large-scale, and we keep saying it's a convenience store. Let's be clear. It's 3 acres, 14 gas pumps, and some sort of a large structure in the streetscape there of Seneca Falls, so it's not just a convenience store. But we see this in other communities where, and this was actually fought off a few years ago. Kinney Drugs wanted to build a huge drugstore. I don't know how big it is, right on the opposite corner from where this was. Eventually it was, they dropped their plans. They're in a better location where they are now because they have all the room they need and all the parking and everything. I was just in Auburn the other day, and here's a corner with a huge drugstore that was built probably 15 years ago. It's vacant. So, one of the questions I have 50 years from now, are people going to say, as we say about many buildings in Seneca Falls, there was a beautiful building there one time, but we had it demolished, and now we have this C store that's closed.
Okay. Josh, is that a concern you share?
I think it's just a little bit overstated in terms of just how gloom and doom it may seem. A convenience store, yes, it may be big, but I hate to break it to anybody, but it's Fall Street is 5 and 20. If you drive that road every day, you see how many 18-wheelers, you see how many large trucks, cars are going through there. It's not going to make that section of Fall Street any busier than it is now. And that's been one of the points that's been raised. And it is the busiest section of Seneca Falls, period.
Let me read some other feedback here. Joel writes to us and says, narratives get created around buildings like this. We saw it at Iola Tuberculosis Sanitarium and the Cataract Brewery and the White Brick Church on West Main. The buildings, they say, are too far gone, and they must be demolished, although the owners never button them up or maintain them. Howard Decker says, never pronounce last rites while the building still stands. A Dollar Tree or Dollar General, a Walmart or a Costco makes a town look like just any other town. Most people seek out the unique, the historical, the places that tell stories. Place matters. A sense of place matters. That's from Joel. But Peter calls in to ask a question. He says, where is the owner of the building in all of this, and what are his rights? It's his building. Josh, what do you think there?
I would defer to Emil on this one. I do not want to get involved in that part of the debate that's where the real polarization comes in, because you're talking about someone who owns a building and a municipal entity saying you can or cannot do this. That's the really, really polarizing part, I think.
Okay, Emil?
Well, I think we're past the point where land use regulations are somehow going to be overturned or ruled unconstitutional. So, and they're all different types of land use regulations, and there are many communities that have historic districts. Geneva certainly has one, Seneca Falls, you'll see them all over the place. And so a property's owner's rights can be subject to land use. There are different types of land use, and we know the usual zoning, size of lots, and things like that. This is just a different form that was really asked for by the federal government and the state government when they created these parks. And just, I agree with Josh when he's talking about community input. Seneca Falls does have a comprehensive plan. It was adopted about 10 years ago. And of course, then there was a dissolution process. And I'm always struck when I look at these reports about how many people were involved in this process. Many people, I want to say over 100 people, they would meet, they had committees, they discussed all these things. It doesn't seem to be happening now. And I think perhaps the comprehensive plan needs to be updated, could be discussed. But I don't see that communication happening. I think we have a town government right now, a town board that doesn't want to hear discussion, anything opposed to what they're talking about. And I when I was on the town board, I wanted to hear people. Sometimes it wasn't pleasant what they were saying, but I had a intent to let people know what was happening. I think now we need to get more. I do agree. We need to get more people involved in these things, and not just, you know, the people that are reusers or preservationists.
Well, let me ask Josh a follow-up question, because when he raised that point earlier, again, that's another point that's not just Seneca Falls. That's almost every community. There are a small group of citizens. They're going to go to council meetings or board meetings. They're going to speak up. They're going to speak out. They're going to demonstrate. It's a small group, and it's a core committed group. But do you think the concern is that's not always representative of what a town population would feel?
Yeah, I mean, I would just respond to, you know, Emil's point that, you know, over 100 people participated in that process 10 years ago. But the fact is, I mean, the town of Seneca Falls, I believe, has a population of, what, 7,000 some people. That is, you know, 100, 200, 300 400, 500, that still isn't really always, you're not always going to get a representative view of what people in Seneca Falls really want or what they really need. Not only because they aren't participating, but also because they may not have a technical voice at the table, someone who really understands what they're going through as opposed to what someone on a board is.
All right, so I'm going to ask Larry Francer a question that he's going to think is unfair, but I'm just going to ask anyway. if you could take townwide votes in towns like Seneca Falls, and if the results were a majority of citizens say, we may or may not need a convenience store, but that old building, it's kind of old, it's annoying. Yeah, well, let's put in something that looks like Myrtle Beach or Niagara Falls, Canada. You know, like the plastic eyesores of the world. Henrietta, New York. Pick anything. And if they said, that's what we want, put that in there. Give us another chain. Do you feel strongly enough about this issue to say, you are wrong? This is not good for this town. And despite a vote of people saying, well, that's what we want anyway, do it. Do you feel strongly enough to say that is misguided?
I do.
Okay.
and that's why there is a Historic Preservation Commission, which is a legal body, which was created through legislation. I mean, that's why this is a CLG community. This is a community that receives funds from the state because they have a Historic Preservation Commission. That's why so much of the investment has been put into this community, because of their zoning. Mm-hmm. So I think people need to understand the reason behind the zoning.
Yeah, this is where Caitlin Mivas is going to say, but Evan, if you give people all the information, most people are going to choose historic preservation. Right?
We wish.
Yeah. No?
I don't, you know, that's a really good question.
Josh, you're shaking your head. No?
I honestly, I guess I just have more faith in people.
You think so? That people would say, yeah.
If you put information in front of people, people will respond to that information. They will.
Yeah, I mean, I have this whole theory that lots of people are preservationists, and they just don't identify that way, because people support preservation by going into downtown Seneca Falls and going to those local businesses that are in those historic buildings, and by visiting, you know, the national park, whatever, that you're supporting historic preservation and economic development, whether you realize it or self-identify that way.
Let me grab one more listener comment. This is from CD, who says, didn't they say that the existing convenience store and gas station right next door to the Huntington building was owned by this same company? Why don't they renovate that place instead? Is that right, Josh?
There's two of them. So they own the convenience stores and gas station on both sides of the building. They've sort of checkerboarded it. And they're in this bizarre situation where they're having to operate two convenience stores, you know, 75 yards away from each other. And that's where the merging, I think that's where that idea came from.
Okay. And so for those who are reading your work in the Finger Lakes Times, and they say, wait a second, I thought you said we didn't have convenience stores. This would be, you view this as a bigger and different option, probably better in terms of food?
It would be unified. It would be larger from what I've seen and from what I've read. It would be larger and more complete.
Okay, so better for the residents, especially those who cannot just drive to a grocery store. Okay, so what's the takeaway here? So where are we going with this? What's next, Josh? What do you want to see happen next?
I just want to see more conversation between the residents, between the town board, between the Historic Preservation Commission, and between folks like the Landmark Society, who are doing awesome work in communities like Seneca Falls. This conversation needs to keep going. no matter what the outcome is with this particular project.
Okay, Caitlin, what's happening next year? What do you want to see happen next?
Yeah, I think that's great. More conversation about these issues, about the different options, and if we can get a conversation going, it all comes down to really what the property owner wants to do and what kind of restrictions the town is willing to put on. So if we can get a conversation between the real key players, that is also important.
Okay, 20 seconds. Larry, what do you want to see next?
Absolutely get Mr. Koch to speak with this developer that we have brought to his attention. Okay. I think that's the most important thing.
Okay, Emil?
I'd like to get back to the 1980s when everybody was excited about what was happening in Seneca Falls. And I think at the same time, dealing with these other issues, I'm not sure what the forum is for dealing with these issues about transportation and food equity. And by the way, I live right across the street from the House of Concern and donate money there. So I think those are important. But I think there was a critical mass of people in the 1980s. And I think the population has changed.
Well, I want to thank not only the Landmark Society, it's landmarksociety.org. Check out their Five to Revive list, of which they generate these five ideas on community preservation every fall, and they get people talking, and they certainly have done that here. Also, FL Times, Finger Lakes Times, Josh Durso is a columnist for them. Thanks for the work. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
And come back. Let's continue the conversation. Larry and Caitlin from the Landmark Society, thanks for the time this
hour. Thanks. Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Emil, yeah, nice to meet you. Thanks for coming in from Seneca Falls. Historic Seneca Falls.
Right.
Short break, more connections coming up.